Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 41 of the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson, and he, Ben Hobson. Each Tuesday, we'll be bringing you all the latest news, views and interviews from across the running world. Ben, what we've got coming up this week?
This week, we're looking at whether the fear of failure is holding you back as a runner. Do you worry about setting ambitious goals in case you come up short? Do you crumble under the pressure of race day? Well, we've been joined by sports psychologist Dr. Victor Thompson to offer you some practical advice on how you can create the perfect running mindset.
Well, I'm very interested to speak with Victor this week because, as you know, I'm taking part in the Adidas Fulham 10K.
Yes.
On Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to get myself in the right sort of 10K mindset, which is a mindset that essentially accepts it's going to be quite painful.
Yeah. Well, I think the fear of failure.
Mm.
And you've got quite a punchy PB.
Yeah, I've got a decent time to beat, so it's not going to be a kind of procession of, like, you know, jogging around and being like, oh, that was my best time. So, yeah, I need to get myself ready for the idea that it's going to be, you know, a painful but hopefully enjoyable and satisfying outing.
I think you'll smash it.
Thanks, mate.
That is me manifestating positivity.
That's what I wanted. Well, I did do a specific session that I think anyone who wants to do a 10K could have a go at. So it was five times a mile.
Yeah.
And you get between 90 seconds and 2 minutes, depending on how kind you're feeling to yourself.
Got it.
Between mile efforts. And each mile effort is done at your target 10K pace.
Right, okay.
So, and if you can do that, the theory goes, you're going to be close to what you want to do.
Much like last week's session, where I had to introduce warm-up and cool-down for you.
Yeah. So you don't just go out and run. You have to do 10 minutes of warm-up.
Yep.
Get yourself in the right physical and mental space for this difficult workout.
Yeah.
And then 10 minutes of cooling down at the end. And that way, you should hopefully avoid being injured.
Fantastic. There we go. Hey, well, good luck with it.
Thanks very much. Well, rumour has it you've been spotted around the parks of London with a skipping rope.
Yeah, I'm still doing that.
Okay, tell us more.
It's good. I'm really enjoying it. We were talking about this earlier, and I've got really, you know, it's not just skipping. I've got really, like, I'm breaking this down into, like, how this is going to make me so much better at running.
Right.
So I've been skipping in minimalist shoes.
Okay.
So that the proprioception, yeah. So everything's, you know, like, I'm feeling every movement, the contact, making sure that, you know, the muscles are engaged correctly. It's not just skipping for skipping's sake. This is all going to be the groundwork for a great comeback.
Sounds good. Well, without further ado, let us welcome our guest of the week. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone, could be an athlete, could be a physio, or a complete unknown. Our guest this week is a sports psychologist who's represented Ireland in the Triathlon World Championships. He's worked with countless athletes to help them manage stress and performance better, and to help them perform under pressure. So Victor Thompson, welcome to the Runner's World podcast.
Thank you.
I've given you a little bit of an intro there, kind of Don King-style intro, but let's hear a little bit more about your kind of background, your sporting background first, if that's all right.
Well, if we go way back, I suppose I started off doing a bit of judo at the local YMCA, and that was good. And then through school, I started going to gyms because I wasn't really a fan of too much of the team sport at the grammar school I went to. Didn't like school, but that's a topic for another day, perhaps. and yeah, went to gyms for a few years and then went to do psychology at university. And then at the end of that psychology degree, I thought, Well, is there anything else to do? And I literally went to W.H. Smith's and looked along the magazines. I thought, cricket? No, I'm not that interested in cricket. Football? No, I'm not that interested in football. Running? No, you get injured. Triathlon? Oh, that's interesting. Oh, there's a combination. And then went out the first day after my last final exam in psychology and went for my first bike ride and had the most horrendous sort of no energy bonk when I was out in the Peak District,
wow.
Which was very sobering. And because I was quite clueless, it was... a tough day out in the saddle. So that was back in 1995, and I've raced every year but one since.
Sure.
So I wanted to discuss a little bit about the fear of failure and the idea that the fear of failure might be holding some people back. So as a kind of general question, why do you think we are worried generally about failing?
It's a great question, and I suppose I was thinking about this earlier, and I think for some people, not everyone, it goes back to some earlier experiences of what failure represents. So getting criticised, getting laughed at, like being told off by your parents maybe, laughed at by your peers, people at school, making a fool of yourself, that type of thing. So I think today as an adult, when you're running and you're entering some sport and you're maybe concerned about failing, it's not really... become embedded for that reason, like 2019 or wherever we are in sport. It's more about what this resonates with within the individual, and then they're learning not to take risks, not to put yourself out there, not to push yourself, especially in a public way. And of course, most running events, there's other people there.
Sure, yeah.
So do you think that there's a way of taking that sense of the fear of the failure and using it for your betterment?
Absolutely. And I think if you are one of those people where it resonates back to something that was maybe negative or difficult, then I think it's important to try to work out what that is, but also to discriminate between things today and that event and how they're very different. So, yes, what does it mean like to fail? What are you afraid of? So say you're afraid of establishing a time to do a 10K. And you don't want to establish a time, or you give a very soft time. You know, it's about 5 minutes slower than you can do. And you tell people that, not that it's 5 minutes slower, but that's the time you broadcast, and that's the time you sort of tell yourself as well. Then I think you're holding yourself back. You're not pushing yourself enough, perhaps, if you want to do a good time. And I think if you don't make that time, if you don't make a better time, if you're not pushing yourself, what's the disadvantage to you rather than the advantage of not pushing yourself in a way? So you look at the pros and cons for that individual and try to reframe it not as failure. You know, failure is quite a big word, but you know, how can you fail in an event? You know, you don't reach your time. It's not life and death. It's not such a big deal for the vast majority of us. It's not such a big deal. And I think it's trying to see that by setting a challenging target that can be doable on the day, your training's going to be better, more focused. Your delivery on that day is probably going to be better, more satisfying, more rewarding. And if that's not something you can do because you start freaking out about committing to a reasonable time, I think that needs to be interrogated a little bit.
I agree. Conversely, do you think that fear of failure can be a healthy thing or a motivating factor?
It can be, and a lot of top athletes are motivated by, I suppose, what we might think of as quite negative things like anger, fear of failure, people criticising them or telling them they can't do something. So yes, it can be very motivating. I remember people early on when I was doing sport, and their, not that this is an advert to do this, but their father on a bike race would maybe drop them off at the bike race, and then if they didn't win, he would have packed up the car and gone. And the kid would have to cycle home. And this is pre-GPS. You know, this is not an easy task after you've done a tough bike race. So that guy was motivated to do well. It probably wasn't the best motivation technique from parents. But he was motivated to succeed because the fear of failing was quite an adverse thing that he wanted to avoid.
Yeah, I heard the same thing about, do you remember Leighton Hewitt, a very competitive Australian tennis player back in sort of early noughties? And apparently something similar happened. He got to the final of his local tournament and he lost, and his dad just drove home and he had to walk 18 miles home.
Gives time to reflect.
Yeah, it's a one way of getting the most out of a child. But you do worry, don't you, about what sport and competition ends up meaning to that person, and it can feel, and it possibly is a real cause of stress as well, I should think.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're stressed by potentially failing, your perception of failing, then it just gets in the way of everything you do. It gets in the way of your training, gets in the way of your digestion of food, feeling like you need to throw up, go to the toilet more before an event. It just really ruins it for you because you don't, well, enjoy it. Maybe that's a strong word for the positivity with doing a sporting event, but it's a lot more negative, dramatic. There's a lot more stress and distress than necessary. And of course, then that manifests itself in other ways in the body. Biomechanically, you become less efficient, you're more tense, your sense of timing, pacing goes off. So you may start off too hard and then pay for that later on, or really hold yourself back and not go properly at the pace that you can sustain. So then when you get to the end of the event, it wasn't that pleasant and you didn't do that well. And then you probably learn not to do it again soon.
Yeah, so it's a real kind of like domino effect, I guess, that starts off with being too stressed. I was going to quickly ask, I mean, you've worked with lots of runners, lots of athletes. If someone said to you, like, I have a real problem with fear of failure, or I'm feeling super under pressure during events and I'm not getting the best out of myself, are there any general things that you could say, or is it very specific to individual cases?
There's definitely general things that you would do. First of all, I try to understand why it's happening for the athlete and then explain why it's very normal. It's normal to feel stressed, and that's a normal reaction, and to have adrenaline in your system and to have all these bodily reactions, the urge to go to the loo, fluttering heart perhaps, more sweatiness, bit more pacing up and down, maybe a poor night's sleep beforehand. These are all normal reactions. So you're not unique. It's not a sign of impending doom. and the reason that it's happening is because of two things, really. It's quite simple. One, this situation, this performance, this event is important to you. To you personally. And secondly, how it's going to go is uncertain. And anxiety or stress loves uncertainty. It's like the fuel for the fires of stress. So therefore, maybe instead of tackling the anxiety and the stress, we think a bit more about, well, what would help you feel more confident?
Right.
And then you don't have so much anxiety and stress to deal with secondary. So what we look at is how your training has prepared you for this. Can you make your training more relevant to prepare you? Any tests and training, do the distance, do the pace, do intervals, that type of thing. Remember relevant, good performances in the past, or if they're not so good, then what you can extract from them. So you feel like, I've moved on from that, I've learned from that, I can tackle this event differently. And then maybe imagine your pacing, how you're going to handle various scenarios, how you're going to do yourself justice. I mean, that doesn't just mean a perfect race, it means, you know, I handle myself well, I rise to the occasion well, I do myself justice, and then I feel proud afterwards. And then there's less anxiety because they're more confident.
Yeah, that's good, yeah.
You sort of mentioned the extracting the positives from what I think that, well, lots of runners will refer to having a bad race or perhaps bad training. How do people switch that mindset that if it was a bad race and, oh, God, that was really... Like, how do you pull out the positives from what would be a bad performance?
Well, I think you need to do a realistic review of it before we think about spinning it positively. So you look at, why do you think it was bad? What went wrong? What was it? Was it to do with your nutrition, your pacing, not pushing yourself enough, going off too hard, getting too excited, that type of thing? And then how can you learn from that for the next time? And these are all experiments. Pacing, pushing yourself, preparing for events. They're all tests. So if you see them as experiments, tests, a part of the learning process, then it's not the big event, the big race. This is the biggest day of my year or the focus of my whole season's training, because that just amplifies the pressure. And yes, there's some truth in that, of course. We can't dismiss it as not important, but let's not over-amplify it if we know that's going to make it more difficult for us. So to try to have a balanced review from every race you do, how big, how small, how it went. It's not just look at the bad and pick over the bones of those. You look at all. What went well that I might want to do again? What didn't go so well that I might want to change? It can be quite simple.
There's a popular phrase now that I've heard a lot of people say. It's quite Instagram-y, actually. It's win or learn. You say it's either do well or you learn. Do you think that's a fairly good approach, you say?
Sounds good. I think it should just be do and learn.
Yeah.
Because you can't always win. Well, maybe you can win for yourself, but for a lot of people, the reality is not going to be that they're going to be in the top half even. You know, half's going to be in the top half, half aren't. Yeah. So how many are going to win? So I think it's that you are testing yourself and you are putting yourself out there to see how you do, and you're evaluating how you manage the occasion and how you executed and what you got out of you on that day. And that's all you can really do. If you're going to beat yourself up about not winning, then there's going to be a lot of self-critical people out there.
That's true. I'm going to quickly ask you about, I know that some coaches recommend this kind of, you got an A goal, right? You got an A goal, and but also maybe you should have a B goal and a C goal during race. That was a C goal, not a C goal.
That'd be weird.
No use running with a seagull, is it? Useless. Part of me thinks that's really good, right? Because it gives you these other options, and if things aren't going well, and part of me thinks that it offers a buyout, a cop out.
It can be. I think it depends on the athlete, and then how they race. And if they're always just hitting the seagull, then you need to recalibrate or investigate as to why. Especially if it's within the athlete's capacity,
yes,
and not just the coach over amplifying the potential of the athlete on any given day. I would normally think of goals quite similarly, but I'd have like the dream goal, which is what's possible given your condition at the moment. And if everything goes ideally, what is possible? And we definitely shoot for that. Secondly, what is realistic? So a few mishaps, especially if you think about longer events like marathons or ultras or things like that. So what's more realistic? You know, a few challenges out there, but you manage them well, that type of thing, you still have quite a good day. And then we have the third level, which is like the self-acceptance, which is just how do you want to handle yourself and the challenge of today? You know, how much do you want to push? How much do you want to problem solve? And some of that might actually involve backing out an event when you get a signal from your body that it's about to go bang or it has gone bang because you don't want to do more damage. So actually, the best thing is not the mental toughness or mental toughness to back off and stop rather than just continuing because you said you would and you're, you know, you've driven 200 miles to doing a race and stayed in a hotel or whatever it might be. So it's about you making the best decisions for you and you managing you and the occasion well. So, that's how I would construct it for an athlete. But I wouldn't just say, the lower level goal, that's all right. Just shoot for that. No.
So if any listener was sort of looking for key markers or a manifestation of the fear of failure, what should they be looking for?
I suppose some of the telltale signs would be that you don't enter any events. Right. You never actually put yourself out there to be tested. Or if you do, then you don't push yourself in the event, or you give yourself a very soft and easy goal to reach, that type of thing. And maybe your training is less focused as well, and your training's less hard. Some athletes take it to some extent that they actually don't push themselves that much in training because they fear that they're not going to make the interval time maybe, or they're not going to be able to do that many repeats. So there's that sort of caution in the training. But then, of course, the consequences of all that is that if you do enter an event, you probably don't feel as satisfied afterwards because you know that you held back a little bit or you finished really strong, which meant that you did the first 95% of the event too easy. Or you get beaten by some people who are training partners and you know you can normally beat them in training quite easily. They're not such a good athlete as you perhaps. So it's a bit empty. So you avoid the big failure or whatever that represents for you, but you... your sport's slightly more empty and less satisfying than it could be.
Victor, thanks so much for coming on the Runner's World podcast. Really interesting to talk a bit more about failure and the kind of right mindset that runners should get into. So thanks very much.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure.
When you run, you must have fun, but kindly don't forget there are 7 golden rules of running etiquette. 1 is shirtless running is the worst of all the sins. 2 is if you're racing, please don't keep your headphones in. 3 if taking selfies, please remember less is more. 4 is never litter, you can't just throw things on the floor. 5 is when you're finished, have a shower or a bath. 6 is to enjoy it, it's supposed to be a laugh. 7, this is crucial, so I've saved this one for last. Always say good morrow if a runner's running past. when you run, you must have fun, but kindly don't forget. There are 7 golden rules of running etiquette.
We've invited our sub-editor and etiquette aficionado.
Oh?
Yes. John Carroll has joined us in the studio and is explaining why we should all be keeping our standards high.
Very high.
Good.
And first of all, thanks for having me in.
No, no worries.
See, that's manners, decency, etiquette.
Good.
Or not being a tool.
Good.
Which is how I like to really call it.
Well, I've heard this running etiquette described as sweatiquette, John, and I'd like to know what do we mean by sweatiquette?
Well, that's a mere tiny part of it. It's crucial. Say, well, here's an example. I went for a coffee on Saturday morning and 2 chaps came barreling in after their park run. Quite a clip, I'm sure, because they were a little bit, you know,
moist.
On the,
right.
And they sat down and they were sliding on the bench like a couple of greased ferrets. It was just, it was deeply unpleasant to watch. And then later on, as they settle in and the odor starts to emanate, you know it's from them.
Yeah.
So it shouldn't be done.
So that's an example of poor running etiquette.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. And I'm guilty myself. I've been on buses and I shouldn't have been there at all.
Yeah. I often find that sometimes it's the kit, though. It's not necessarily the person, that kit that you know that you shouldn't have worn because maybe it's got some residual stench to it.
Oh, it's built in like a tick on a dog.
Yeah. You
know, this stuff gets in there. Yeah, it's not going. And we all love to keep our kit for longer than we probably should.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, I want to drill down into running etiquette.
Let's drill.
Let's do some drilling.
Yeah.
Could you fire up the drill, Ben, please?
No. So how about finishing a race with a sprint?
Oh, I've seen this. And no. you know the person who's doing it hasn't been trying. You know, they've been pootling along, you know, looking at the sky and the trees and talking about the marvellous sea bath they had last night. Then they hit the last 20 metres and they just kick in the afterburners, running past a person who has put in their biggest effort ever. And they just slide on by and then they wave the hands in the air like they just didn't give a goddamn about anything.
This is a certain type of sprint finish that essentially is a little bit phony,
If it's done with a smile... That's, I think, a key indicator. If it's a smiling sprint, that means you haven't been doing the rest of the race properly.
It's very hard to do both.
If you're sprinting and you're looking like, you know, the world is crumbling around you, that's the correct sprint face.
Yes, the sprint face is a grimace.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
So we're okay.
Not
just
a
in
wink
principle.
And a smile. Just finish the race.
There's nothing wrong with sprint finish, in theory, if you have given an honest effort throughout.
Yeah, of course. Otherwise, you're just belittling other people. And everyone, you may fool the other person, you may fool yourself, but rest assured, no one likes you.
Okay, let's explore a related thing here. So you're overtaking a runner. Mm. You've paced yourself.
I can't comment.
Imagine, John, you were overtaking a runner, theoretically. And I think a lot of people have the impulse that they ought to say something. Mm. They're kind of compelled to say, you know, keep up the good work, whatever. What do you think about that? Do you think that's grandstanding? Or?
A little bit, because keep up the good work or well done or any variation thereof just says, I'm a better runner than you are. And we both know it. You know, you may as well throw yourself into the river. I'll bet you can't swim either.
Now, I would say, before we get into the comment that's made, I think that the etiquette begins with as you approach the runner to overtake. Mm-hmm. Now, on your left or on your right, that's important.
Yeah. Unless, only if you mean that, though. If you say on your left, and by which you mean, look on your left, what a nice tree. That's no good.
Yeah, that's true.
A simple on your left, then you glide on by.
Yeah. Okay. I don't think there needs to be a comment.
No.
As you pass.
You're not commenting on their run. They don't need to hear you talk to their run.
Okay, no commenting as you pass.
Even in the greatest, like the greatest spirit of the race environment, just to motivate the others, I feel like the passing of someone with a comment easily misconstrued. So this is a big one. It's slightly out of season, but you might see a few brave people out there.
brave isn't the word.
Let's talk about shirtless or topless running.
Men.
Yeah, men.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
Is it a
uniformly bad look?
Yes.
Right, okay.
Yes. If you're Captain America or the fellow with the fins, that Momoa.
Yeah.
Maybe, just about, but even then... The question is, was your 15-gram technical tee too heavy for you?
Right.
So, otherwise, no.
What about if it's just really hot?
No.
Right.
Because they're technical tees, they wick sweat. Right. And let's bear in mind, a lot of people run in the morning, other people are having the breakfast. Nobody wants to see that.
True.
Breakfast stays down in the belly.
I wonder if, I'm going to bring my context specific in here again.
Mm-hmm.
What if you're on the beach on holiday?
Well, and you're running.
Shirtless running's all right, isn't it?
It's just running back and forth in the sea, though, isn't it? You know,
you could get a couple of miles in.
Yeah. See, I'm going to say that I don't mind it as a thing. I think that if people feel comfortable enough with themselves... See, I think there's a crossover between British prudishness and what is acceptable. So I think that if someone's hot and their T-shirt is annoying them and they want to take it off, that's fine. But the British man in me goes, well, that's not very good form, is it?
And I'm not even British.
Well, there you go. And you don't like it.
I'm Irish. Well, it's very cold in Ireland.
True. So I'm going to say that I don't... I think there is a bit of showboating with it.
That's the thing.
You've got an incredibly muscular human doing it and they've taken their top off for no real apparent reason apart from that, fine. But if I see someone giving it the beans and they've taken their top off, I'm allowing it.
Okay. Fair enough.
I'm dead against, but we'll move on.
Okay.
We'll agree to fight later on.
All right, fine.
Everyone here loves running, John, and everyone listening to this show loves running, but not everybody loves running. When we're talking with these people, who may also be our friends,
sometimes,
should we expect some level of interest, or should we just accept that our running isn't of interest to other non-runners?
You can talk to them, but only if you're prepared to listen to them talk to you about their child's latest antics with feces.
That's true.
For example.
Right.
Or worse again, their golf round.
True.
Right, so it's
there's a trade-off.
A sort of quid pro quo.
Very much, yeah, very Trumpian quid pro quo. If you're prepared to talk to them about running and they talk to you about golf, you got to listen.
Oh, that's a real shame, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it also means you can call them at 4 a.m. and say,
hey,
about that run, forgot to tell you this part.
It's hard though, isn't it? It's hard to rein yourself in with when you're passionate about a subject, particularly when we work in it as we do. You can think that running...
Oh, we're the worst. No one wants to be friends with us.
But you can be like, well, this is really of global importance. You know, my park run time.
Is that
whatever.
How you see your running career? Of global importance.
Well, I hope not. But I think it can dominate your natural conversation.
Yeah, I mean, if there's even the slightest
in
majority,
or like
in a room of 30, if there are 3 runners, they'll naturally congregate and make the conversation about that.
Yeah, right. Finally, John, it's not quite approaching Christmas, but you know, it's getting that way. So we've got a Christmas question. It was a recent Runner's World poll on Twitter showed that 34% of our runners felt a Christmas Day run was an essential part of the festive season. 34% said it was a complete non-starter, and 32% said it was something they'd sneak in occasionally. What's your take? In the Carroll household, where does Christmas Day running fit in?
Well, I take it as I find it, and I never found it.
Right, wouldn't do it.
No, I don't exercise on Christmas Day. It's in the Bible somewhere. I think it's toward the back in Revelation.
I could see you down at the Crystal Palace Park Run, potentially.
Could you?
Yeah.
I won't be there.
No.
What about you?
I think I'd have to go in the 32, where it's something I would love to do it and sneak it in. I just think... it's practically quite difficult and quite a hard sell.
I mean, I've started on the booze pretty early with the cooking.
Because you're allowed when you're cooking.
Yeah, if you're cooking for the turkey in the morning, you can have, you know, a drink.
But I mean,
bottle.
We're talking about nine a.m. here.
Yeah, it's a long day. Mm-hmm.
You know, long day.
Pace yourself, Rick. Yeah. Wow. And we're not talking shots.
If relatives are coming over, you know, you'll need that.
Yeah.
Yes, true family.
Well, John, thanks so much for coming on the Runner's World podcast and giving us your sense of what is right and what is wrong.
I'm happy to do it any time. I'll tell anybody what's right and wrong.
What do you think of what John and we have had to say? Let us know at podcast@runnersworld.co.uk.
Be polite.
His fingers on a button, his ears to the ground. He's done a bit of Googling and he's had a nose around.
He's a detective wearing running shoes. Kerry McCarthy and his weekly running news.
Thankfully, he's joined us once more. I can't think of anything witty to say this time around, so I'm just going to say, hi, Kerry, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm a little disgruntled that I don't have an epic introduction this week, but I guess I've kind of been spoilt in previous episodes. This is taking me back down a peg or two.
Good.
Anyway, very pleased to be back. I've got 3 news items to catch you all up with this week. Firstly, drug testing.
Right. Yep.
There is a new way of catching people who want to cheat the system. Thankfully, because I think we can all agree that what's been used so far has been suboptimal, as Runner's World editor Andy Dixon likes to say.
Yeah.
Basically, it's to do with your genes. Instead of testing, as drugs testers have done previously for individual substances. They are now going to look at your gene sequencing to see when genes are turned on.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
As a guide to whether or not you've been using substances. The big difference with this is that when they were just testing for individual substances, there are substances now that athletes are using that could be untraceable after even a few hours after they've taken it, certainly a couple of days. With this new method now, which has been being developed since 2006, the drug testers can actually go back months and months. They've got a really good way of seeing whether you've been up to no good or not.
I think it's bonkers that this is the state of the sport. You just know what I mean? Like that since 2006, they've had to find a new way of trying to catch everyone.
Yeah,
I mean I know that's a bit like ooh, otherworldly kind of like reference to the whole situation. But it's like everyone's just having to fight in the system constantly.
That's it. You've got to try and stay one step ahead of the cheats. And I think possibly to now it felt like it's the other way around.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, my question on this, you know, obviously this is it's not quite a breaking news story, but it's very new. And so there's a lot more information yet to come out. The International Olympic Committee are hoping to be able to roll it out next summer at the Olympics. But they say that even if they don't, they'll be taking extra samples so that if it is approved after that, they can go back and check.
All right.
But what I would be interested to know is how this is more reliable than the current athlete biological passport, blood passport, as some of you might know it as. You know, because that basically measures your blood values over a period of time.
Mm.
So this is also there's also a time element in this, in being able to go back and look for inconsistencies. Yeah. So I'd be keen to see how this is gonna trump that. Moving on from the world of elites down to the likes of the rest of us. Another week, another study proving how awesome running is.
Yeah.
And for those of you who are a little bit lazy or thinking, what can I get away with over Christmas while still having some benefit? The top line from this study is that any amount of running at all reduces risk of early death.
Good.
Perfect. Yeah.
2 minutes. Live a little bit longer.
Run for the bus. Job done.
Yeah.
It's not quite that little. 1 minute a week would do it. Basically, the World Health Organization did a meta-analysis, which means that they took lots of other studies and they analysed those. They reckon that about 3.2 million deaths each year are down to people not doing enough physical activity. And the researchers say that the latest findings kind of push back from results of other studies that you might have read in the papers, which kind of hint, which have hinted that benefits increase with more running, but might drop off at very high levels.
Right.
So it's not the case of the more you do, the better it is. Even if you only do once a week, it's better than nothing. So the research, which was published in the British Journal of Sports Medicine, it kind of focused on 14 previous studies based on 6 different groups of participants. Now, in total, that's more than 230,000 people, so that's pretty robust. And they were followed over periods ranging between 5.5 and 35 years. Each study was slightly different, but they basically found that runners had a 27% lower risk of early death from any cause at all, and a 30% and 23% lower risk of early death from cardiovascular problems or cancer, respectively. And finally, back to the elites. This is a news item that I find staggering, actually. The Diamond League is going to undergo some changes, and the IAAF, led by our own Seb Coe, is cutting some events from the core list. So it will no longer feature the 200 metres, the 3,000 metre steeplechase, discus or triple jump at all of its events next year. It will feature some or all of those at certain ones.
Right.
So they're not all, they're not being cut entirely, but they are being culled. So the reason why this is being done is that Seb Coe says that the objective of the IAAF is to create a faster paced, more exciting global league that will be the showcase for our sport, a league that broadcasters want to show and fans want to watch. Now, I should say that's not just him sitting in his leather swivel chair in Monaco and getting stroking his chin and going, what can I do? This is based, they say, on research that they've done. However, they conducted research on the popularity events in China, France, South Africa and the USA, and conducted surveys in Belgium, Great Britain, Switzerland. I would say, had you gone to some of the East African countries and said, do you want the 3,000 metre steeplechase to be cut? They'd have said, I think not. Thank you very much.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, they dominate,
similarly, like
they,
Cuba or, you know, some of the South American countries with the jumping events where they're very strong. I don't know that it's a great idea. And what I do know is that the athletes think it's a terrible idea because triple jumper Christian Taylor has actually started an athletes union in direct response to this. And pretty much any athlete you can think of has come out in support and said, yep, I'd like to sign up. There is an athletes commission currently, but that's linked to the IAAF, and he says this is now the trigger to have something completely independent where athletes can have more of a voice.
Right. Yeah.
Because as much as there will be some of those events taking place at some Diamond League events, none of those events that I've mentioned will be in the Diamond League final in Zurich in September 2020 next year. If you win a Diamond League, you get something like $1 million. Which for an athlete is a huge amount of money. They're not Premier League footballers. So people who take part in those sports, the visibility is less, the opportunity for earning is less. I think this is one that's likely to run.
I mean, even off the back of, you know, the 5,000 and the 10,000, that was Diamond League, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They got rid of that. Yeah. So that's like immediately, and we've already talked about how great those races are to watch and why that's not a great idea. But the 200 metres...
Well, yeah, that's because that one came in apparently because currently the televised version of a Diamond League meeting is 2 hours, and Coe wants to get it down to 90 minutes because he thinks that's snappier, or that's what people want, possibly based on responses. And the sports that have come out that are being culled are obviously the ones that did come out in the surveys as lower popularity.
Right.
But as Di Green, the Welsh from GB hurdler, 400 metre hurdler, said, there's no such thing as a boring event. It's about how you present it.
Yeah. That's right, isn't it? I think a few people have come out and said that there are more imaginative ways to play with a format. You could do kind of multi-screen.
Yeah.
You could try and get the crowd more involved. Like, you know, we talked about the sort of the night of 10,000 metre PBs, but that's made 10K running seem really sexy again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this feels quite out of step with those kind of developments, I think.
The Diamond League meets are the kind of like the touch points of the athletic season, aren't they? And, you know, we already know that other meets outside of that, you know, at kind of like Don Valley and Birmingham, places like that are under-attended already because the sport isn't being promoted enough. And then you're taking the gold standard series by its name, the Diamond League, and saying, actually, we're just going to cut it a little bit because I don't know why everyone's got ADHD and they can't pay attention for 2 hours.
No. Well, I hope the athletes' union, this startup, has a strong voice and can possibly offer some alternatives.
Do you know what? I think it's one of those ideas where, you know, we all sort of knew really that there wasn't an athletes union, but nobody really kind of paid any attention to it. And now that Christian Taylor has said, hold on, I'm starting one, it's like, my God, yes. What an obvious but great idea. There absolutely needs to be one.
Yeah.
Great, mate. Thank you so much for coming in and
welcome,
informing us all.
Cheers, Kerry. Thanks a lot. So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. A big thanks to our guests, Victor Thompson, John Carroll and Kerry McCarthy, and to you, of course, for listening.
The Runner's World podcast was recorded at Number 8 Studios in Soho and is available on Acast, iTunes and all your favourite podcast apps. Just search Runner's World UK. If you've enjoyed the episode, please give us a review and we'll see you again next week.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing.
Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.